So this evening we are considering, first of all, Ezra chapter 5. We'll read the chapter, verse 1. Then the prophets, Haggai the prophet, and Zechariah the son of Iddo, prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel, even unto them. Then rose up Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua the son of Josedech, and began to build the house of God which is at Jerusalem, and with them were the prophets of God helping them. At the same time came to them Tatnai, governor on this side the river, and Shetha Bosnai, and their companions, and said thus unto them, Who hath commanded you to build this house, and to make up this wall? Then said we unto them after this manner, What are the names of the men that make this building? But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, that they could not cause them to cease, till the matter came to Darius. And then they returned answer by letter concerning this matter. The copy of the letter that Tatnai, governor on this side that the river, and Shetha Bosnai, and his companions, the Apharsachites, which were on this side the river, sent unto Darius the king. They sent a letter unto him, wherein was written thus, Unto Darius the king, all peace. Be it known unto the king that we went into the province of Judea to the house of the great God, which is builded with great stones, and timber is laid in the walls, and this work goeth fast on and prospereth in their hands. Then asked we those elders, and said unto them thus, Who commanded you to build this house and to make up these walls? We ask their names also to certify thee, that we might write the names of the men that were the chief of them. And thus they returned us answer, saying, We are the servants of the God of heaven and earth, and build the house that was builded these many years ago, which a great king of Israel builded and set up. But after that our fathers had provoked the God of heaven unto wrath, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried the people away into Babylon. But in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Babylon, the same king Cyrus made a decree to build this house of God. And the vessels also of gold and silver of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple that was in Jerusalem and brought them into the temple of Babylon, those did Cyrus the king take out of the temple of Babylon, and they were delivered unto one whose name was Sheshbazzar, whom he had made governor, and said unto him, Take these vessels, go, carry them into the temple that is in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be builded in his place. Then came the same Sheshbazzar, and laid the foundation of the house of God which is in Jerusalem, and since that time, even until now, hath it been in building, and yet it is not finished. Now therefore, if it seem good to the king, let there be search made in the king's treasure house, which is there at Babylon, whether it be so, that a decree was made of Cyrus the king to build this house of God at Jerusalem, and let the king send his pleasure to us concerning this matter. Now, again, we are looking to the Lord for his blessing upon the reading of his word. We saw that the greater part of Ezra chapter 4 was taken up with the subject of opposition. That chapter commenced with the thoughts of amalgamation, but then turned to show clearly the repeated opposition of the enemies of God to the work of God. But I take it that when we come to chapters 5 and 6, we could really write over those chapters, Opposition Overcome. The first two verses of chapter 5 tell us of the resumption of the work. In other words, the work is now continuing. In verse 1, we're told of the important ministry of Haggai and Zechariah. The ministry of Haggai and Zechariah. And then in verse 2, we see quite clearly the response of Zerubbabel and Jeshua. But the remaining part of chapter 5, verse 3, right the way down to the end, verse 17, is taken up with this inquiry of Tatnai, the governor. First of all, in verses 3 to 5, it is the inquiry of the Jews. And then the remaining verses 6 through to 17, the inquiry of Tatnai, the governor, of Darius the king. So the bulk of our chapter is taken up with this inquiry. But I want to spend some time looking at these important opening verses of the chapter. So first of all then, verses 1 and 2, the resumption of the work. And we are focusing attention first of all in verse 1 upon the ministry of Haggai and Zechariah. I trust that we have established that for a period of approximately 15 years, the work of rebuilding the temple was totally neglected. And God then, in his wisdom, he raised up two prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, through whom he might speak to the people. And we have the words of these two prophets preserved for us in the books that bear their names. With Haggai, if we were to turn to the two chapters of his prophecy, we would find that the emphasis is very much upon the house of God. Whilst on the other hand, Zechariah is more concerned with the God of the house. I'm sure you're acquainted with Haggai's prophecy, perhaps less acquainted with Zechariah's, but nevertheless, with Haggai, the message is relatively simple. It's relatively simple and relatively plain. But when we come to Zechariah, his message is more profound, and we might use the word mystical. So here we have a very good example of the blending of ministries, the complementary character of their teaching and exhortation effecting the desired results, because that will come as we proceed through these verses. Haggai's words, they're stirring words, and they were directed to the conscience. And Haggai was more concerned with the present, whereas Zechariah's ministry was more directed to the heart. And he indicated in his visions and in his prophecies the glories of a future day. And he was urging enthusiasm in the work of the house of God in the light of the future prosperity and blessedness of Zion. It's good that the ministries of brethren blend together. I'm sure you appreciate that there is a variety of gift among the people of God. And yet God uses his servants in different ways. They may have different approaches. They may have slightly different ways of presenting the truth. Some are more given to the teaching, the expounding of the word of God. Others have a ministry of exhortation, calling from the saints, a response to the teaching that they have received. But God uses his servants in this way. I'm sure you appreciate that Haggai always asserts the divine origin of his messages. And so five times over, within the scope of those two chapters of Haggai's prophecy, we read, "The word of the Lord came." And then again we have such expressions as, "Thus saith," or "saith Jehovah of hosts." I want to say quite clearly and plainly this evening that we do need men who from the scriptures can speak with divine authority. I do trust that we believe that God can still speak to his people today through his word. There is internal evidence, indeed, that Haggai was speaking the Lord's message. And so we have that most quoted expression, Haggai, the Lord's messenger in the Lord's message. I often feel in fulfilling responsibility for the teaching of the word that we as the servants of God, we do really need to be in the message. Indeed, if we haven't appreciated the truth of what we are teaching ourselves, we cannot expect it to influence the lives of those who listen to us. We must be the Lord's messengers in the Lord's message. In spite of all that transpired, as recorded in the book of Ezra, Haggai, in his prophecy, makes no reference whatsoever to the external difficulties. And the message was directed towards the state of the people and makes manifest the real hindrance to the work. We indicated in the ministry yesterday evening that the work had really ceased because it was no longer the chief interest of those engaged in it. And as I closed the second message yesterday evening, I emphasised that opposition never really hinders the work of God, but rather waning interest on the part of God's people is frequently the reason for weakness and spiritual dearth. I'm sure you're acquainted with those words of Haggai. The people say, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. And very sadly, that same attitude may be found among believers today. Now, it's good to see some younger ones present in the meeting. And it may be that there are some here who are still studying. And the student may maintain that his studies must claim first priority, and that at present he's unable to engage in the Lord's service until he's graduated and secured a job. And then the businessman, well, he might argue that the stresses and strains of life are such that he's unable to afford time and energy for the Lord's work. But there will come a time when he will give himself to the work of God. One day these people will detach themselves from their present obsessions and fulfill their responsibilities. But I want to stress, brethren, the obligations face us today. We need to appreciate that we're living in last times and souls are perishing today. And others are in need of a helping hand today. We need to give ourselves to the work, to the service of God. And then, of course, we remember those words of Haggai, I'm quoting now from chapter 1, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed, your panelled houses, and this house lie waste?" You see, in the context, the people had found no difficulty in building, and not only building, but embellishing their own houses. And when it comes to it, brethren, let's be honest with ourselves. Let's be honest before God. When it comes to it, we really do what we want to do. And those modest stone buildings, which they might well have reasonably have been expected to be content with, they were apparently regarded as being inadequate. They must have panelled walls and ceilings. Stone was available in abundance and at low cost, and timber was scarce. But nevertheless, they must give themselves to building their houses and embellishing them. Nothing would satisfy them but the best. Their houses must be both comfortable and elegant. This word brings its challenge, and it is an inevitable alternative that we must be occupied with the Lord's things or with our own things. And I believe that it was with very heavy heart that the Apostle Paul had to say of those about him at Rome when he was writing his letter to the Philippians, all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. We could go on, of course, and develop other themes from the prophecy of Haggai, but let me just say this. Living in our own things eventually leads to spiritual poverty and dissatisfaction. And I'm just asking you, as an individual, how are things working with you? Are you really prospering in soul? Or are you giving a good deal of time and effort to things which yield very little? Remember, Haggai could say, ye have sown much and bring in little. But you see, we learn later on in the opening chapter of the prophecy of Haggai that the Lord was pleased to bless the testimony of his prophets. We find, of course, that they prophesied, I'm coming back to Ezra chapter 5, they prophesied in the name of the God of Israel. And what is needed is that we should do as the remnant did in that day. Because in verse 12 of Haggai chapter 1, we read, Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Josedek, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God. We are looking for results from these meetings. We all need to take stock of our lives. Whatever stage we've reached in our Christian experience, we need to respond to the voice of God. Well, we have that in verse 2, because in verse 2 of Ezra chapter 5, we are told of the response of Zerubbabel and Jeshua. Energy in the work was the fruitful result of such ministry. We might well say that hearers became doers. And so we read, then rose up Zerubbabel and Jeshua and began to build the house of God. You see, God had shown them that he was not only concerned that they should build, but how they should build. This is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel. This is the word that was spoken by Zechariah, saying, not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. And our thoughts are taken over to the first epistle to the Corinthians and chapter 3, as Paul says, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereupon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. We notice in passing, of course, the example that was set by the prophets themselves, because it says, with them were the prophets of God helping them. So undoubtedly, they practiced what they preached, and perhaps they helped them by continuing to encourage them and to exhort them. And the remarkable fact here is that they built without waiting to hear whether or not the king sanctioned it. We come back to the things that we have been considering over recent days. We ought to obey God rather than men. And the record of the manner in which God showed that he was above all the devices of the adversary is really found in the remainder of chapter 5 and indeed in the chapter that follows. Now we come to the lengthy section, verses 3 through to 17, dealing with the inquiry of Tatnai the governor, and first of all in verses 3 to 5 of the Jews. In verses 3 and 4, we note that the authority for building is questioned. Now, we don't read of any persecution of the people during the time when they were building their own houses. But immediately the building of the house of the Lord recommenced, the adversaries were up in arms. Now, it's not improbable, trust I'm not reading too much between the lines, it's not improbable that the Samaritans had complained to Tatnai, the governor of all the provinces on that side, or this side of the river, in other words, on the west of the Euphrates. And he, accompanied by this man, Shetha Bosnai, perhaps he was also a Persian official, and their companions, and they came to Jerusalem. For what purpose? They came to determine for themselves just what was going on. And they come with their challenging questions. Question number one, who have commanded you to build this house? Question number two, what are the names of the men that make this building? I notice that Mr. Darby gives the preferred rendering at the beginning of the verse, and they said to them after this manner. Now the answers given by Zerubbabel and Joshua or Jeshua to these two questions are not actually recorded at this point in the chapter. But as we shall see, they are recounted by Tatnai in his letter to King Darius. In verse 5, we are told of the eye of God upon his people. I take it that this verse is really a comment that is made by Ezra himself as he is penning the words of this book. And if Satan is relentless and merciless in his opposition to the work of God, I want to stress this evening that God is certainly not indifferent to the needs and the weaknesses of his servants when they are engaged in the conflict. And there was a far more important reason why Tatnai and his officials could not cause the work to cease. What was it? The answer is that the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews. So in that day, the eye of God was upon his beloved people, beholding their situation, in order that he might minister the needed courage in the presence of the enemy. And can I say that the God of Ezra's day is still the God of our day? Amen. And when God's eye is upon his people in any circumstance, and he so wills, no power on earth is able to frustrate his purpose. Let us lay hold upon the words of Paul in Romans chapter 8. If God be for us, who can be against us? So there in verses 3 to 5, we have this inquiry of Tatnai, the governor, the inquiry of the Jews. But now we have, in the latter part of the chapter, verses 6 through to 17, the inquiry of Tatnai, the governor, of Darius the king. And these verses really are setting out this letter that was written by Tatnai to Darius. It seems to have fallen my lot to speak a lot about letters in this series of meetings. Well, here we have another example as we come to the latter part of chapter 5. First of all, in verses 6 to 10. And as Tatnai writes this letter, we have the problem outlined. And, should I say, as a good historian, Ezra likes to quote from original sources. Well, we looked at four letters in the preceding chapter, And this is the fifth such document that Ezra mentions. Now, the text appears to be given in full. So here then we have a copy of the letter which Tatnai and his companions sent to Darius. We have mention, do we not, in verse 6 of the Apharsachites. And these were a Medo-Persian tribe who may have served as a bodyguard to Tatnai. Now, you might wonder, well, what interest is there in such a letter as we consider this evening the ministry of the word? What benefit, what profit has it for us here today? Well, I judge that a brief analysis, at least, of this letter will not only be interesting, but I trust that it will be profitable. So it is addressed unto Darius the king, all peace. Well, that was a standard greeting to a monarch. Now look at the language. I'm looking at verse 8. Says Tatnai, or writes Tatnai, we went into the province of Judea. You see, it was as though their going there was only casual and that there was no malice associated with it whatsoever. And they skillfully write as if a mere accident had given them to see what made them fear for the king's honour. Nevertheless, they do make reference to the house of the great God which is builded. Once Gentile domination of Jerusalem began through Nebuchadnezzar, and we are taking our thoughts back to 606 BC, it appears that Gentile rulers became aware that the God of Israel was distinct from and superior to the many gods that they worshipped. Indeed, did you notice in our reading that they were evidently impressed with the work of those Jews? Look at the language of verse 8. This work goeth fast on and prospereth in their hands. So it is the enemy who is bearing testimony to the diligence and to the devotedness of the builders. Now let us bear in mind that the world outside looks on at the work of the people of God and inevitably forms its own judgment, on the one hand, as to the quality of that work, and also to the degree of effort and energy put into the work of the Lord. Paul writes, "And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily." With what in view? Do it heartily as to the Lord, and not unto men. I do feel, brethren, that sometimes the work of God can be taken up in a casual manner, and we do not give the necessary effort that we would give in fulfilling our daily responsibilities in our employment. Let us remember, we need to be faithful in our daily employment. Of course we do. But nevertheless, we mustn't give less effort to our service for the Lord. Verses 9 and 10 actually repeat the questions that were put to the elders of the Jews as recorded in verses 3 and 4 of our chapter. And verse 10 actually states the motive for the second question. What was the second question? Well, The second question was, we asked their names also to certify thee, and the motive was that we might write the names of the men that were the chief of them. In other words, they wanted to know the names of those who were leaders in this particular enterprise. When we come to verses 11 through to 15, we have a record of the answer of the Jews. Now, will you take note of the ground taken by the leaders of the Jews when confronted again by their enemies? And their opponents put on record that their answer was twofold. It was what we would call spiritual, verses 11 and 12. They might have referred to it as being religious. But then in verses 13 and 15, the answer is of a political flavour. So their answer was twofold, both religious or spiritual, and also political. So Tatnai and his companions, they're still penning this letter. And what do they write? And thus they returned us answer, saying, we are the servants of the God of heaven and earth. So they are acknowledging that they had divine authority for carrying out this particular work. This was their confession. And may I suggest, brethren, that in dealing with the enemy, there is no weapon more potent than the bold confession of our true character. Well, sometimes we say, quoting the words of James' epistle, resist the devil and he will flee from you. But please remember that those words are prefaced by the statement, submit yourselves therefore to God, and then resist the devil and he will flee from you. So we need a bold confession of that which has been given to us, a bold confession of our true character. In that day, they could say, we are servants of the God of heaven and earth. But then they go on to say, and build the house that was builded these many years ago, which a great king, we know of course that great king was Solomon, which a great king of Israel builded and set up. So there was not only a confession, a bold confession, but that there was also a conviction that they were carrying out God's will by rebuilding the temple. Now we do need, brethren, to have a conviction about the work in which we are engaged. That this particular task has been given to us and we are responsible for carrying it through. If they were the servants of the God of heaven and earth, and if he was the great God, the question would naturally arise as to why this God had permitted the temple to be destroyed in the first place. And so we find that the reason is given in verse 12. And very sadly, they had to acknowledge that their fathers had provoked the God of heaven unto wrath. And consequently, he had given them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house. And, to add to that, carried the people away into Babylon. Perhaps I should say again that the God of heaven was the term by which the Lord, Jehovah, was known to the peoples around them. They not only had divine authority, but they also had human authority. And their explanation went on to tell, in verse 13, of the decree of Cyrus, which gave them permission to rebuild the temple. And they emphasized that he had restored to them the holy vessels of the house of God taken previously by Nebuchadnezzar, verse 14. Indeed, Cyrus had gone as far as personally instructing Sheshbazzar. We established that that was the Babylonian name for Zerubbabel. Cyrus had personally instructed Sheshbazzar to take these vessels and let the house of God be builded in his place. I take it that that refers to the site, the very site upon which it had formerly stood. And this Gentile monarch, whom we've already seen, whose heart had been stirred by the God of heaven, he was anxious to carry out his will. In verse 16, we have the final comment of Tatnai as he draws his letter to a conclusion. The words of this verse most probably form the comment of Tatnai to Darius on the situation, rather than give the final part of the answer of the Jews to Tatnai and his associates. I tend to lean to that feeling. And he speaks of the laying of the foundation of the house of God by Sheshbazzar, and then, presumably with limited knowledge of the situation, he actually asserts, since that time, even until now, and that of course is over a period of more than 15 years, hath it been in building, and yet it is not finished. Well, we know that it hadn't continued during that period of time. Now we come in the closing verse to the final recommendation of Tatnai to Darius. Clearly in doubt of the truth of the account given by the Jews, Tatnai and those associated with him, having acknowledged the right of Darius to have a final decision in this matter, Tatnai recommended that the archives that were held in the king's treasure house at Babylon be searched for the decree of Cyrus. In other words, the one that had actually authorized the building of the house of God at Jerusalem. You know, throughout the history of the people of God, they have been disbelieved by the world and by those who have opposed them and persecuted them. In other words, the men of the world are not prepared to receive the authority of the Word of God itself. And Tatnai's final request was that the king should communicate his decision to himself and to his associates. Let the king send his pleasure to us concerning this matter. As I finish, may I say, the result, the outcome, could never be in doubt, because God never, never fails those who lay hold of him in faith. And the boldness of these men, led by Zerubbabel and Jeshua, the boldness of these men was honoured by God, and we shall see the development of this in the chapter that follows. We trust the Lord will bless his word to our hearts for his name's sake.